This is a Mexican Crossing Lines. Hello, and welcome to a Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez Shemp. And my co-host today is actually
Nemo Cicados.
Thanks for being with me today, Nemo. Everybody wants to know, where's Duke? And he has been under the weather. And actually, I have been to him a lot more than me. He's got a fever. He's not feeling well.
Mm-mm.
So he's in sleepy land right now. Mm-hmm. I hope he's watching.
Cutting him some slack today.
Listening, sending you love and healing so that you get better real quick and you can come join me back in the studio. Today we are celebrating. We are talking about Women's Day, International Women's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Day Without a Woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that happening today.
Mm-hmm. Wearing red.
Wearing red. I'm wearing red. I want you guys to see this shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Duke gave me this shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can see that.
Yep. It's clear. Another wise Latina woman.
I thought that was pretty apropos for today's show. So, and I have to say that I am a Mexican woman. I am an indigenous woman.
Mm-hmm.
I can't separate those two things from each other because I'm both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a daughter and I'm also a mother at the same time. You know, it's like you can't separate the two things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about some things that we need to talk about on today's program. Mm-hmm. It is appropriately Tecpatl Day,
mm-hmm,
on the Aztec calendar.
Which means flint.
Which means flint. And the flint knife, it's about sharpening.
Well, sharpening, but also like, you know, cutting down to the truth.
Sharpening the mind and the spirit. The way that surgical knife, a flint,
right,
would be cutting to the marrow of the truth. And that's something that we have to do in order to progress as human beings, in order to progress as women. And we have some issues that we have to talk about as women. And we have to do this in love. We have to have this discussion in love. That does not mean that we don't talk about the bad stuff. Not talking about the bad stuff is not the same as speaking from a place of love. If you love someone, you would tell them that they have a cancer growing on them, so mm-hmm, that they could get it removed or treated, right? You wouldn't let them keep it just because you don't want them to feel bad about the fact that you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, holding on to patriarchy is something that men and women do in our society. Mm-hmm. And based upon the levels of our superiority in this world, our privilege in this world, and our access in this world, we are stratified as people and as women. And we need to do a better job. So I'm going to bring this conversation in love, but we have to have this conversation because I have to tell you, I haven't been feeling very celebrational. Is that a right word? Celebratory?
Yes, yeah, celebratory, you know, just kind of not enthusiastic really about,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
the climate, I suppose.
Yeah, I haven't been. So, for those of you who are just tuning in, we're going to have a conversation about Women's Day, International Woman's Day,
mm-hmm,
a day without a woman.
Yep.
But I'm going to get deep on you. We're going to have that conversation here on 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And we're also broadcasting on Shoutcast, so you can go and listen live by going to kpppfm.com. You can contact us by leaving us a message. Get about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That little number on the side of her head, 701-566-0917.
Mm-hmm. And how can people get at us in other ways, Nima?
Mm-hmm. And below that donation link that I also put there, you can email Cindy at kppfm.com and or Duke at kppfm.com. You can also tweet at media_PPP or, post on my mother's fan page for fans at Cindy Go Shemp.
You're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sitting in for Duke.
Mm-hmm.
I miss him on the show with me, regardless of the fact that he's sick, because the conversation that we're going to have is about women. It is also about feminism.
Mm-hmm.
It is also about men.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about patriarchy. It's also about rape culture. It's also about the exploitation, the sexploitation of women and girls from birth to the grave. And, you know, people don't want to have those kinds of conversations on the International Women's Day. You know, there's a lot of desire to recognize our achievements, and we have amazing women to recognize. But I hate thinking of the celebration of women in International Women's Day being primarily about looking backwards or patting ourselves in the back for all that we've accomplished. You've come a long way, baby. Because the truth is, we haven't come a long way.
Mm-mm.
As women, we have not come a long way. There is still gross inequality, mm-hmm, in the world of women. There is still rampant sexual exploitation, abuse, harassment, and rape,
mm-hmm,
on an epidemic level. If you are fortunate enough to go to college and you are a woman,
mm-hmm,
you are... one in five of you will be raped. That's what you can look forward to. One in five. If I told you that one in five people was going to get hit by a truck, if I told you that one in five people was going to be buried alive, this would be an alarming, horrifying statistic that you would want to immediately address and eradicate from your society. But the truth is, we all talk about hating rape, but we don't talk about fixing it. And the environment exists, such as the case, where even women at the level of access of college, you know what that means? It means mostly white, mostly upper middle class,
mm-hmm,
with access to financial resources and status. Because you know that the majority of college people are not people of color.
Mm-mm.
Except, you know, at traditionally black colleges or traditionally,
mm-hmm,
diverse colleges in places like California, then there is tons and tons of Mexicans, right?
Right.
But what I'm saying, though, is like, in Everywhere Town USA, mm-hmm, it's really a majority of people that are white and affluent that have access to this. And even there, one in five college women will be raped.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that for all women, that is the case. And when we talk about rape culture, when we talk about exploitation of women, we say, well, I hate rape. I don't endorse rape. I don't condone rape. But, you know, there is a path on a spectrum on which the sexual exploitation of a woman occurs. And it doesn't start at rape. It starts at sometimes ridiculously young ages.
Mm-hmm.
The sexualization of little girls. JonBenet Ramsey, anyone? Honey Boo Boo, anybody? You know, so we talk about where rape culture comes from. There is a long history that precedes rape culture, the sexualization of women, the exploitation of women, keeping women in certain jobs, keeping women in certain financial slavery to men. And let's not forget that women were once property. We weren't considered to be human. We didn't have the right to vote. We didn't have... And kids, let me just tell you, because the truth is the truth is the truth. We want to pretend like, oh, yes, all of the accomplishments of women. We've come so far. Look at the things that we can do. We almost broke the glass ceiling again, but it didn't happen. The truth is that the majority of women, or let me put it to you this way. Women are still, by and far, above any kind of accident, any kind of disease, anything that kills us. More in danger from men killing us than anything else. That is a pretty startling statistic. And so when we talk about how do we protect women, we have to start by talking about men.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk about patriarchy. And the problem is that as women, okay, women are the oppressed group in the conversation here. As women,
mm-hmm.
you can't ask the oppressed people to liberate themselves, or you shouldn't be asking for them to be able to do it on their own when the people in power are men.
Mm-hmm.
So men have to hold each other accountable. That is one of the things that has to happen. But how do they know when they have so much privilege that it blinds them to the plight of women? How do men know? Because men think that they know, but you can't know. Men grow up with the exclusive privilege from a very young age of having expectations of women,
mm-hmm.
every woman around them. And they can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expected for them to choose a partner, choose a girl they want to be with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like her? They start asking the little boys, they start asking the little girls, you know, who do you want to marry? And things like this, you know, these expectations, ridiculous expectations
mm-hmm.
that we hold
mm-hmm.
for boys and for girls.
Yeah. I know that, like, on Tumblr, the social media site that I hang out at often, there are, at least in the queer circles, there's a lot of, like, jokes about how when babies are born, we get the baby clothes. And sometimes they'll say weird things like, you know, lady killer, or, you know, just these expectations that the messages that we put on even children's clothes.
The binary.
Right.
And we're talking about gender binaries, but we're also talking about stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Because women are stereotyped in certain ways. But all of this also intersects with race.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference in what people expect from a woman, from what kind of woman. In terms of how quiet or demure or subservient she should be to men.
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous women are expected to look down and not even look at men in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, that does come from a place of tradition, but it also comes from a place of colonization.
Yep.
And that has to do with slavery, and that Black people and indigenous people, especially those who were enslaved on haciendas, hacendados, would prevent or would not allow people to look at them. Mm-hmm. The peasants could not look them in the face. They had to get out of the way if they were coming down the sidewalk, mm-hmm. Or go on the other side of the street. You know, that was what the expectation was. That's how our people were raised, in a system both of racism and also patriarchy. So these things intersect and we have to look at them, which is why I want to talk a little bit about personal stories, personal experiences. Okay.
I have a good example about how, especially with sexism, and it's been really fascinating to me as an autistic person, growing up transgender, because it took until 12 before I got an official diagnosis for my autism, right? And you try to get earlier than that frequently, and the doctors would refuse to put that label on me up until that point. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is that when they identify autism in cisgender boys, it's because they notice, like, the quiet, demure characteristics of autism in boys. But of course, that's supposed to be quote unquote normal for cisgender girls. And if me presenting as a girl, it's like, oh, that's normal. They're just quiet, you know? And so now that I'm growing up, it's like, no, this is perfectly normal. And it's silly to base symptoms of mental health issues or disabilities based on the sexist traits.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And so it totally and ultimately messes up opportunities you could have for accommodations in your life. And I know I definitely missed out on that due to sexism and identifying my issues.
Yeah, definitely. There is also a parallel that I want to make that might help folks understand what I'm talking about a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
When I try to explain to people what racism feels like, it's very difficult to explain the impacts of racism to someone that doesn't experience it. You can tell them what the dimensions of it are, and you can try to describe it. But there is an element of terror involved on the part of the more privileged person you're telling your story to.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they start to see and hear and understand the depth, the breadth of the experience, the ginormousness of the problem, mm-hmm. when they can appreciate a lot of these things, if they believe you and if they listen long enough to things that are more difficult than you can imagine for people to do. But if they do, it becomes so horrifying and overwhelming when you have spent your entire life not seeing and not experiencing and not even knowing it was there. And now you're coming into this realization and you're starting to be able to understand what this person is trying to tell you about what their experience is like every day. But it's horrific. It makes you feel bad. It may overwhelm you inside, make you feel like there's nothing you can do. The problem is too big. But that is your fear talking. There are very big problems in this world. Climate change is one of them. And I'm pretty sure the scientists all agree at this point we're kind of screwed. Because even if we halted all the bad things we're doing and stop right now, we have done so much damage to the planet. It is very, very difficult to imagine that the Earth could come back into its natural alignment fast enough for most of our planet to become extinct. I don't think that there's a possibility that that could happen at this point. Do you want to quit trying, though? Are you going to quit trying to save yourself, to minimize the damage, to hopefully extend the lives of the people and the generations that are going to come after you? Just because someone says to you, well, you know, the planet is really going to go through a phase of extinction because of all of the damage that we have caused here. And lots of life is going to be lost. Do you just throw up your hands and go, you know, like Trump and our Representative Kramer here in Kevin Kramer here in North Dakota, who says, well, you know, God put us here to have us extract everything from the earth. She belongs to us.
I don't think the guy read the Bible. I mean, I'm pretty sure God's deliberately told Adam, you're going to take care of everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, this friend of yours here, you're going to work together as a team.
This is true.
And you know what the real sin is? Passing over the buck and throwing Eve under the bus.
That was the first sin.
Not taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm. See, and a lot of people don't talk about that. A lot of people tell you the story of Adam and Eve, and they always throw Eve under the bus in the story, like she created sin. No. God told Adam, here is a person that's here to be your partner, mm-hmm, and help you, mm-hmm, to take care of all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to need help.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he do?
Well, it wasn't me. It was a woman you gave me.
Yeah. This lousy woman you gave me did this stuff. And she's to blame. Man, what a basic male.
Right
there.
Right.
Like
the most basic.
Basic. So disturbing. And we see them. They still exist today.
Mm-hmm.
And we continue to see the victim, the women, being blamed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. So now I want to bring some levity to the conversation before I get deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to get a little bit deeper here. And I have an article for you that I'm going to refer you to.
Mm-hmm.
And it is shocking. I wrote this a while back with the intent of trying to bring about the conversation I'm having with you today.
Mm-hmm.
Because although I have said that men in the world need to be just as concerned about our women's equality, women's health, women's access to education, representation, fair and equal representation in government and in all other areas of policy, that it is also just as important for women together to figure out where our power lies and how we can save ourselves. Because in any situation where an oppressed person is not examining the structure of their oppression and figuring out their liberation, there's a severe problem. And women, all of us women on this planet, and especially right here in the United States where we are sitting right now, we've failed pretty miserably at advancing our rights as a whole. And I have a reason. I believe that is happening. I believe it is happening to us because we have failed to recognize white feminism has failed to recognize the importance of putting the most oppressed people and their issues at the forefront. We need to fix this first. Pretend you're in a hospital, right? Pretend you're in the hospital. And when you're inside of the hospital, there's all of these people that are dying, different kinds of death, okay? Somebody has a severe laceration and they are bleeding out, mm-hmm. okay? Another person is having chest pains, okay? Another person is having some kind of abdominal pains. The staff at the hospital is going to go through this group of people and assess who is dying more quickly, and they're going to try to help that person as quickly as possible. Right? That's how it works, right? You go and you fix the biggest problem, the greatest problem. That's what you need to get to first, because that person is going to die. And we are, in fact, talking about life and death on this planet, in this world. And let me just say for the record that the two things are connected. I've said this before, but if you haven't heard me say it, I'll repeat it now. The hatred of women, the fact that women are not given equal access, equal opportunity, that women suffer the greatest health problems. They still have an abysmal rate of women dying in childbirth and infant mortality rates for this country. It's really shocking. I mean, our numbers are pretty close to some third world countries. That should be appalling to us. But we don't even talk about it. It's like we're walking through, what is that meme where everything is burning in the background and they're sitting there and they're like drinking coffee and they're like, this is okay.
It's like, yeah, when things are just going down in your area and you're just kind of like, you know, blocking it out.
It's a symptom of the way that we treat women, that our earth is dying, because the earth is our mother, literally. Mm-hmm. And we are letting her die. We continue to rape her and we don't even care.
It's so sad because, like, you know, in recent artist circles, I'm noticing this trend where people are like, this is a really nice spring day. But it, like, on the inside, you know, the earth is dying.
It is. And we don't care. And women are getting raped. And women are beaten every minute. Women still die more from men beating them to death, killing them, than from anything else that women die from. And we're not doing anything to stop that in this world. And the symptoms are everywhere because we're also killing the earth. It is a symptom, a noticeable one that people can see from far away. Those people are sick. Those people are disturbed. They have a cancer in their soul. They have a death wish. They want to destroy themselves and everything around them. This is a form of psychosis that we suffer from on this earth because we don't do right by women, because we choose to exploit and maintain women in this constant and continuous oppression, we women included. We participate in it. And we do it because patriarchy and male power is still more important for people to maintain. That is what men and women on the globe have chosen to do, to support male supremacy and specifically white male supremacy. Okay. Now, this is where we're going to go down the rabbit hole. We got to go down the rabbit hole because it's important to get to where these intersections diverge us from the same experience, white women and women of color. Now I'm going to ask my fellow white women, my fellow women out there who happen to be of European persuasion or white passing looks
mm-hmm.
that have more privilege, I'm going to ask you all to suspend your disbelief about what it is to be a woman. Because you assume sometimes that even though I'm a woman of color, our experiences probably are pretty similar. And that's normal. We all want to understand. Mm-hmm. We all want to feel empathy and be able to relate to somebody yeah. else's experience. So you go, oh, okay, that's like this, right? So I get it. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that in this case.
Right.
Because what it does is that it gaslights us, women of color, in a way
mm-hmm.
that you want to immediately relate to something you can never experience. And we have to tell you, we have to let you know that the most loving thing that you can do for us is to believe us that our experiences are vastly, vastly, vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that it might horrify you to really be able to understand the depth of what I'm trying to explain to you,
mm-hmm.
overwhelm you even. So the better way of dealing with it is simply to believe us and also to listen to the solutions that we would put forth so that you could partner with us to help us pull those who are most oppressed out of the hole onto a level playing field mm-hmm. with the rest of women, even though we are not as a whole treated in an equality with men, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we can do for each other is to partner together to pull the most oppressed women out of the hole onto that level playing field. So that as women, we can work toward our liberation as a unit, not as a fracture. I wanted to share with you a funny video that talks about this particular subject of white feminism. And I think they did a brilliant job at explaining the angst I refer to here in the show today about Women's Day on 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo, Moorhead. And I want you to check it out and tell me what you think, okay?
All right, starting it up.
Are you a woman? Are you a white woman and a feminist? Do you have trouble focusing on the issues that affect only heterosexual cisgender women? Then white feminism is the brand of feminism for you. White feminism is a simple, single-dose tablet that you take with your daily morning yogurt and calcium supplements. White feminism segregates the issues that matter to you from the ones that you have no experience with. Things like increasing the minimum wage or addressing police brutality. White feminism empowers you to shut down the patriarchy and members of the LGBTQ community, women of color, the disabled, and otherwise marginalized persons.
Feminism has so many meanings these days. Inclusive, intersectional. Where's the feminism for women in this political climate who are worried about all the money we have to spend on bridesmaids' dresses this summer? After I spoke to my doctor, who's my girlfriend with a PhD in anthropology, I knew I'd found the right feminism for me. White feminism fits my lifestyle, earning $50,000 a year, living with my Instagram famous French bulldog in a neighborhood with 3 Thai delivery places.
White feminism isn't for everyone. It's for you. Side effects may include believing the only wage gap that exists is 23 cents, saying things like, I can't believe our country is racist during rosé happy hour, or spending over $200 on an ovary sweater. So if you're not ready, or unwilling to check your privilege, talk to your doctor. Scratch that. Talk to your nutritionist or Pilates instructor about white feminism today.
Okay. I like that we started with that because it's funny that the way that they portray it, it is definitely hilarious that we have this disconnect between women. And it is based on race and gender binaries.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people that are more stalked, raped, and murdered are transgender Black women.
Mm-hmm.
The largest group of missing and murdered women in this country and on this continent is of African women and Indigenous women.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we know that. All of us women know that. All the people know that. I hope you know that. I don't know if you if you don't know that, I'm really upset with you. I don't care what gender you are. I don't care if you're gay or straight. If you don't know that the most murdered women are transgendered Black women,
where have you been?
I have a problem with that. And I have a problem with it because it is so prevalent. Another Black transgender woman was murdered
a few days ago.
Yeah.
Last number I checked, there was at least just 10 women now this year murdered.
Yeah.
It's only March.
It's okay. So it's a really big problem that we don't know each other's problems. It's a really, really big problem that we don't know each other's problems. But that isn't your fault. It's not our fault. It's not my fault. We did not create the structures and the institutions that segregated our lives from each other, that put me in ghettos while it put white women in suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
We did not create the powers of institutional policy that gave white women access through affirmative action to college education while leaving women of color behind.
Mm-hmm.
We did not create the policies and the laws that gave Black and brown women sterilization and white women access to Planned Parenting and abortion. But we do have to live with the consequences of that reality, girls.
Mm-hmm.
We do have to deal with the consequences of those realities as women. And as a woman of color, I'm coming to you broken like that. And I'm telling you, I was sterilized by my doctor after having my second child. And she did it in a way that was very oppressive and abusive at a time when I was about to give birth. And it made me feel like so many other Mexican and Black women that I heard bullied into having their tubes tied or bullied into taking Depo Provera and having horrible side effects like I had. While my white college girlfriends were out tripping the light fantastic and getting a hold of day after pills and getting access to abortions if they needed them.
Mm-hmm.
We live in two different, very, very different worlds that we didn't create. And when women react defensively against hearing that truth, they're operating on the idea that ignoring each other's plight because of the differences of our race or religion has more to do with a personal decision than an institution of racial bias.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the mistake. Because We don't have choices within this institution. None of us do. That is why so many women, especially white women who have more access and privilege, continue to vote against their own interests and to throw women of color under the bus.
Like our recent elections. If you look at statistics, mostly white women voted for our current President Trump.
For Trump.
Mm-hmm. That's on you, white ladies.
We didn't talk about that, but it is the truth. And I have to ask, how come y'all ain't talking to each other and holding each other accountable? Because I think that that's where we have to start.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where we have to start. And let me tell you, I know it works. But let me just go back to my article for a second, because I hope you guys can take a look at it. I'm not going to rehash everything it says, but let me give you some of the statistical evidence. Some of it I've already talked about. One out of four women are sexually assaulted before the age of 18. The statistics are higher for brown and black women. One out of five college women are raped on campus. And even though that was an epidemic problem, Congress narrowly reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act.
Mm-hmm.
Women still don't earn equal pay. And white women still earn more than Latina and black women do, even on that spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Women in America are continuously furious at politicians, but what we ignore within our women's feminist movement, or whatever you want to call it, is that white women have acted against their own self-interest when they support policies that restrict women's rights to exercise their free will over their sexual or reproductive organs or their progeny. And whatever motive this person, this woman, gives you for reinforcing patriarchy and oppression of women, the true reason is that those women do support male patriarchy, specifically white male superiority,
mm-hmm.
and white violence, white male violence on women, all of them, mostly women of color. Because conservative women, white women, understand that they're going to suffer the least. That's the truth. They're going to be the ones that suffer the least of those outcomes. Because white women know that black and Latinas' issues are the worst in the entire country with regard to sexuality, reproductive care. Black, Latina, and Native women are all historically subjected to rape and forced sterilization in a way that white women never were. And this is because of the eugenics movement in America, which reinforced Jim Crow ideologies and policies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considered scientific necessity to reduce the fertility of women of less desirable races, like Latinos, indigenous women, African women. So these forced sterilizations of women of color, they continue this day. But we rarely discuss it in the media. The white feminist movement rarely discusses these issues. White women organized together for women's suffrage when there wasn't yet any equality between people of color,
mm-hmm.
and white people. In fact, white women played on the racism in America,
mm-hmm.
and said, the suffragettes said,
yeah,
that you're going to give a black man the right to vote over a white woman? And this was supposed to raise the ire of other white people. Like, hey, that's not fair,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I mean, like, there was like a really nice article from a transgender advocate in some little snippet. And they were saying, like, every time I see white feminism crop up, it's always like, you know, they're not really looking for, you know, actual equality. They're looking for more privilege.
Mm-hmm. Anybody that has worked on dismantling racism or being an ally to people of color knows what being a good ally is.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about being a good ally in a lot of my past shows.
Mm-hmm.
But like the ally of any movement, silent support isn't considered being a good ally.
Nope.
The whole point of being an ally is that people from the oppressed group get a hand up from the people who are in power in the dominant group. And the reason why these allies can be very useful to a movement is because they have influence and privilege that can help bring more visibility to an issue that might otherwise continue to be ignored by their peers, white women. I'm talking about your male peers in the white dominant group. That is how white women have been able to gain the privileges and the power that they have gained, because they went to their male components in that white power structure and they said, I should be able to go to college, though. I'm really important and smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then the father was like, you should, you know. and then, you know, a woman was like, I should be able to own property. And a man in her, she convinced a man in power in her life that she should.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't fought the same way in a united way to give these things, the things that women of color have needed, to them. So I talked about how, as unfortunate as the reality may be, the United States of America was founded on the systemic land theft, rape, and genocide of indigenous First Nations people, my people. And in order to justify that genocide, manifest destiny was used, mm-hmm. and slavery of both indigenous bodies as well as African bodies was established as a system of supremacy, and it was institutionalized into the government. Part of the law, part of the constitution, part of the educational system, the mathematical, scientific, medical, every, mm-hmm. everything, housing, mm-hmm. all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the rape of black women at the hands of the slave owners, that was something all of the white women knew about.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like it. Mm-mm. But the consequences of these contentious relationships they created, that were created by slave ownership and white supremacy and land theft and the rape of these women, it was repeated with impunity for centuries, and it pitted white women against women of color,
mm-hmm.
Who were the objects of their husbands' desires. And the laws that were put into place by white men only reinforced and upheld their rights to control women and their ability to reproduce with them, and the treatment that white women and their children got versus black women and brown women and their children. That was a system that was set up in the law. White women were allowed to kill with impunity black women, slaves, indigenous women, and their children. It's ugly, guys, but we have to talk about where it comes from, because you can't eradicate, you can't unite until you learn and you heal, right? And then you can begin to work together to build power as a group. So we need to walk through this history and understand that. In many ways, the impetus for the feminist system, the white feminist system, comes from women's desire, white women's desire specifically, to be free sexually,
mm-hmm.
to be able to choose when they have children, if they have children,
mm-hmm.
when they have sex, if they have sex.
Mm-hmm.
How they have sex, and also economic power.
Yep.
That is something that moved, that birthed the white feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And they did endeavor to gain economic independence by actually getting political power and the ability, like the male counterparts, to vote and to own land.
Mm-hmm.
And white women gained these rights by using the influence and the allyship with white men.
Mm-hmm.
And without those men pleading the cause of these women, they would have never achieved their goals.
Mm-mm.
So white men, at least some of them, had to believe that these white ladies spoke the truth about their oppression and how they wanted to be liberated from that oppression, and they helped them. To most men, gender inequality is just a figment of women's collective imagination. And that remains true to this day. Most men that I talk to, they do not believe that there is great inequality, especially not great inequality, okay? So we're supposed to not care about the fact that there is a difference in what we get paid for at the same amount of work or better work, that we lack access to equal medical care, reproductive care, careers, education, lifespan, and safety, etc., etc., etc. So in the end, as women, we need to come together, women of color and white women, to understand how all women will benefit from this. So far, we've kind of been ignoring each other's issues, not understanding each other's issues, and not uniting.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with our approach is that in order for all women to come together to fight for our common good, the women among us who have the most privilege and power have to, one, care about us,
mm-hmm.
two, understand us, and three, believe us. And then put those problems and the solutions that we would like to come about at the top of the problem list, at the front of the bus, not on the back burner, you know?
Right.
So that is what I propose that we can do, that we can talk about as women today, about how we go forward. I would like to celebrate Women's Day. I would like to celebrate the achievement of women of all races actually working together. In order to do that, we have to leave our segregated worlds and our segregated lives, and we have to actually know each other. And no, I don't mean that you see a black person or a brown person in your neighborhood or at your school or at your job and you say hi to them. I mean friends, like friends for life, the people that come to your wedding, to your child's christening, to a parent's funeral, the person that you call when you have a problem, the person that you would go and visit in a hospital or would come and visit you if you were in one.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of person who you would babysit their kids, bring them soup if they were sick, shovel their snow if they were out of town, pick up their mail. You know their parents. Mm-hmm. You know their grandparents. You visited their house.
The bestest of best friends that have become like
your
family.
That's the kind of relationships we have to build with each other. White women with women of color. And not in a predatory or exploitative way, but in a way of understanding and listening to the women who are most oppressed and helping each other heal. There is a huge underlying scary problem for women of color. And when you look at it as white women, it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be like lancing a boil, but you have to do it because it will not heal unless you get all of the pus out of there. Expose it to air, let it clear out, and then start to heal, start to scab over. So I appreciate all of the ladies as well as all of the men that were listening to our show today. All of the women and men who care about what happens to us as human beings if we continue to ignore what is happening to women in this world. And the state of women in this world is not what it should be. It's not even close. And we are literally turning back the tide under this Trump administration. If we are to survive together, we need to get our poop in a group. Men to women and women to women across race and religion. We need to literally stop what we're doing and focus on doing for someone else every day. Focus on thinking about someone else and what they're going through every day and immerse yourself in that world and make a commitment to do it until you're dead. Make a commitment to do it forever. Because I don't get to walk away from the fact that I'm a woman. And I don't get to walk away from the fact that I am a Mexican. So we need to figure out a way to care about each other and make commitments to take care of each other in a real and sustainable way if we want to survive together. And that's what I wanted to bring to you today. My thoughts, my reflections on this Women's Day, International Women's Day, a day without a woman, something I would never want to contemplate, a day without a woman. So I leave you with these thoughts. I thank you for your comments and your questions. I will be checking them out.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines on 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo, Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Thank you for listening.